I'm here as a representative of the Human Rights Forum, an organization which is based in Andhra Pradesh but is not concerned only about Andhra Pradesh. My voice is quite loud.
It's working.
Yeah. I also happen to be a lawyer by profession, but I was introduced as advocate. I'm not here as an advocate. I think we are here because we are concerned about the declaration by the Union Home Minister that he is going to send the paramilitary and maybe even the army to the what the Maoists call the Dandakaranya region, that is the Orissa, Chhattisgarh, Jharkhand and parts of West Bengal, which is a maybe not my majority but definitely preponderantly a tribal area, an Adivasi area. And the decision of the Home Ministry to that they are going to send the paramilitary forces to crush the Maoists, and the challenge thrown by the Maoists partly by the comments they have made in the context of Lalgarh and partly by some of their actions in Chhattisgarh, Rajnandgaon recently, where they blew up a police van and killed policemen, this is creating, has created certain apprehension, and that is the reason why we are here, hoping to mitigate the consequence, the likely consequence to the people living there. The question is not whether the state will succeed in suppressing the Maoists or the Maoists will succeed in overthrowing the state. Definitely they are serious political concerns, but today we are here, we are motivated by the fact that, by the concern that the people living there who are preponderantly the Adivasis are likely to suffer a lot if this goes on. That's what brings us here, that's how I understand it. And I'll try to say whatever I want to say in this context. What do we do to mitigate the likely suffering? That is our concern. I'll put it in less broad terms than Professor Mohanty, because the broader we make it, the more contentious the politics of it will become. The very title of this militarization of democratic space can be critiqued for half an hour by various people. The state can say the Maoists have destroyed the democratic space, therefore we are militarizing. Why do you call it militarizing? The Maoists will say we are part of the democratic space, why are you putting us outside it and talking about democratic space? That debate can go on forever. So I'll put it a little, I'll put it only in this fashion, because I'm aware that there are people here who have various ways of looking at the Maoists and at the state's response to the Maoists. Let us incorporate all that into, all those different political views into our concern, that whatever happens, the people shall not suffer beyond what may be unavoidable in a political conflict. The people shall not suffer. That's our concern. Now, I was asked to talk about a similar experience we had in Andhra Pradesh. Andhra Pradesh has had a nearly, by now it is the 40th year of the Maoist movement in, it used to be called the Naxalite movement, now it's called the Maoist movement in Andhra Pradesh. There was no militarization of the kind that the Home Ministry threatens today, but there was very heavy deployment of the police and extremely cruel, barbarous kind of actions by the police, including extrajudicial killing, but also much more than that, which affected the ordinary people to an extent where, and then the Maoists themselves, their own response was to identify agents of the state, attack them, isolate them. It's a whole process which went on. Most people are familiar with this. It came to a situation where people living in those areas would get up every morning with a sense of relief that nobody came and knocked on the door the previous night. It could be one side or the other side. You could be suspected of being an informer of the police, you could be suspected of being an agent of the Maoists, an activist of the Maoists, sympathizer, whatever. And the whole process of violence and injury and suffering and deprivation, a feeling was there that quite irrespective of the rights and wrongs of the whole issue, whether we sympathize with the Maoists and we agree with their politics that India can be liberated only by an armed struggle or not, whether we accept the state's contention that the Indian constitution does provide scope for achieving justice or not, independent of and irrespective of these political positions, an effort must be made to see that in the process of the practical working out of this dialogue, this is a debate, it's also a dialogue between the state and the Maoists, it's working itself out in a violent way. In the process of this working out, the people shall not, the kind of suffering they are undergoing shall be mitigated as much as possible. There was this concern, and a committee was formed, maybe now it is about 14 years ago in Andhra Pradesh, called a Committee of Concerned Citizens, who thought the state and the Maoists should be brought together to have a dialogue, a discussion, whose parameters can be worked out. The purpose of that will be to ensure that while whatever is positive in the achievements of the Maoists, after all we are engaging ourselves in a positive way only because we do respect them, that they have done a lot for the life and welfare of the people and many parts of the country, especially in the Adivasi areas and in other backward areas. It is the Maoists who have given strength to the people to stand up and demand their rights and talk about their rights and sufferings and so on. That's a fact. That's why we respect them. But in spite of that, then taking the response of the state and the counter response of the Maoists, and then the spiral which goes on, keeps building, taking this into account, the idea of bringing them together to have some kind of a dialogue will be to mitigate the suffering as much as possible without imposing. This is very important, because if you talk about demilitarization or stopping the militarization and ask the state as well as the Maoists to come for a dialogue, from the government the first statement will be, let them put down the arms, we'll talk to them. Let them give up armed struggle, let them give up their notions of extra constitutional struggles, and then we'll talk. That's obviously no way, because they believe in something, right or wrong, it's a political view that they have. Without asking them to give up their strategy of armed struggle, and naturally without asking the state to give up its perceived duty to uphold the constitution, while both continue to do whatever they believe is their duty or their responsibility towards history or towards society or whatever it is. Nevertheless, to work for mitigating the suffering of the people. This was a very concrete agenda that the Committee of Concerned Citizens did have. It was a long process. The one suggestion is that we start some such an effort. There are many reasons why it's much more difficult today in the Central Indian area than it was in Andhra Pradesh. So the long process which required, firstly, a group of people whom both would respect while both would also be suspicious of. They'll be suspicious of because they're criticizing them, but both would respect to the extent of talking to them, being willing to discuss with them, talk to them, listen to them and answer them. Such a group was formed in Andhra Pradesh because we have had a history of persons in some position in society speaking out against the state violence, which has been extremely brutal in Andhra Pradesh. Such people would be respected by the Maoists irrespective of the political criticism that they may have of the Maoists. And otherwise, these people are known as persons of integrity in society, and therefore state also cannot condemn them outright. Such a group of people was formed, who had a really long process, nearly 4 to 5 years they went around talking to the Maoists and then getting back to the state and talking to the state, getting back to the Maoists. It was a long process. The first barrier to break was to make the state accept that it shall talk to them without insisting on their putting down arms. That was the most difficult part, because the state would go on saying that they are an extra legal force, extra constitutional force, how can we talk to somebody who holds arms? It's a ridiculous position. It's a fact of life that they have arms. It's also a fact of life that in spite of all the suffering that the people go through when they encourage or support or sympathize with an armed movement, people are supporting them, are sympathizing with them, are giving them shelter, are taking their problems to them and trying to get them resolved. It's also a fact. A democratic administration has to look at this as a fact, accept it as a fact, and then respond. So that took some time. And on side of the Maoists, of course, their question was, what are we supposed to talk? Are we supposed to bargain about the revolution? Are we supposed to say, give half revolution, we'll give up our struggle? For instance, a national liberation movement can, for instance, ask, instead of complete secession from India, we'll ask for autonomy. There's a possibility of a bargain. There can be no bargain about revolution, where they want a different kind of society and state power to build that kind of society. So what do we talk? This went on. So the question as to, because you see, when we talk of, when we tell the state not to militarize, not to send the armed forces to Chhattisgarh, Jharkhand, Orissa, this area, we naturally, the state would ask us, the government would ask us, what are you appealing to them? What are you asking them to do? We'll have to say that they also stop their attacks on the police and attacks, their incidents of acts of violence. Then where does it go? Naturally, they have their political beliefs, their political organization, their political activity. So some kind of a dialogue between the two would have to necessarily follow any appeal for peace. Some kind of a dialogue, some kind of a political engagement would necessarily have to follow any appeal for peace. What can the political engagement be about? This is a question that has come up. One idea was, as it was discussed in Andhra Pradesh, was that a large number of issues which the state ought to have been cognizant of, but was not, were raised by the Maoists, and they agitated about them. They built some kind of a people's movement around those issues. They won the support of the people because they were exposing those issues, which the state ought to have recognized and ought to have remedied. So one idea was that a dialogue would be a process of education for the government, for the state, which would realize that there are real problems, real issues, real concerns here which have to be addressed, and not just sending the army, sending the paramilitary, sending the police to finish them off. And on their side, it was again hoped as a part of this process that once the Maoists realize or recognize that the state is willing to address these issues, they will also reduce the levels of violence, maybe go in for mass movements and mass organization instead of depending so much upon actions of violence. The idea was that the state would be democratized and the Maoists also would be persuaded to emphasize violence less and mass activity more. Persuaded to emphasize violence less and organizing the people by mass means, unarmed means, peaceful means more. This was one kind of one level of hope. Maybe it was too idealistic, but that was one of the hopes which were there in the beginning when the whole process of dialogue was talked about. That was the maximum. From there you can come down to various levels of expectation from the dialogue. The least expectation was, and to be frank, this was my level of expectation, because I thought the first one was too idealistic. The least expectation was that once they are able to, when we bring them to a table and sit and have a dialogue, they can arrive at some kind of an agreement on the modalities of their mutual functioning, so that the injury they cause to the ordinary people is as less as possible. In a sense, this is the decision of desperation, that you can't stop them anyway. You can neither stop them from using armed struggle as a method of liberating society, nor can you stop the state from naturally from enforcing its power, its authority under the law. So one way at least is just as you to warring nations, you ask them to come to some agreement about the rules of war. Some kind of an agreement as to the rules of civil war, some kind of whatever one may call it, low intensity civil war is what, civil conflict is what the government calls it. This was the least expectation. The maximum was that both would learn from each other. At least the state would learn from the Maoists and honestly learn, in which case in turn the Maoists would also accept a method of functioning which would be less violent and more oriented towards mass organization. This was the maximum expectation. The minimum was some kind of it took a long time to convince the two sides that this is a realistic proposal, which would in fact be beneficial for both. We must be honestly cognizant of the fact that both are political entities, both the state and the Maoists, and they are not going to accept any proposal which is not for their political benefit. One has to be honest about it. We talk about demilitarization, stopping militarization, peace, ceasefire, whatever it is. They are not going to be persuaded unless they feel that it is to their political advantage, both being political entities. In Andhra Pradesh, we feel in retrospect, what really convinced both of them was that a conviction that the ordinary people living in the areas of conflict wanted a dialogue. This became apparent over the period. The Committee of Concerned Citizens went and held this kind of meeting. Just give it in newspapers and hold a meeting in a hall in various small towns in the mostly Telangana region of Andhra Pradesh, which is has been a theatre for communist struggles for a long time, and also other parts of Andhra Pradesh where the Maoists were strong. A lot of people attended without any effort by anybody to mobilize people. Strikingly, none of them, excepting a very few, none of them spoke out against the Maoists. All of them had recognition that the presence of the Maoists, their activity has helped ordinary people, poor people, the processes of democracy to sustain themselves. But all were critical of the Maoists for their, because what happens with the Maoist kind of struggle is that on the one hand, it bases itself upon the people, takes up the issues of the people, mobilizes, organizes around those issues and thus give them benefits. Parallelly, it's also a political struggle for smashing the state and capturing state power. These are two things which proceed parallelly. The second aspect of the struggle can often have negative effects on the very people whom the first aspect serves, whose interest the first aspect serves. This is the characteristic of any kind of an armed struggle, which struggles for capture of state power while basing itself upon the aspirations and needs of the ordinary people. So people were appreciative of the first aspect and were critical of what the Maoists do in their struggle against the state. And the state, given its cunning, converts this into a process where the struggle around the issues of the people gets minimized and the struggle against the state gets maximized. And the Maoists also respond in such a way that they also reinforce the same maximization of the ding-dong battle between the militants and the state. This is a process which has gone on. And therefore, a lot of criticism from that aspect has been there. In fact, as we have been repeatedly saying, whether it's the Maoists or the Khalistan or the Kashmiris or anybody, any of these armed struggles, the way the armed struggle, the response of the state, again their counter, again the response, the way it works out is that ultimately all of them are found to kill more of their own social base than their declared enemies. This is true of Kashmir, true of Punjab, true of the Maoists, true of everyone. You count the persons whom they have killed, majority turn out to be from their own purported social base. That's how the armed conflicts work out. That's the, some kind of one, it's a law. I would declare it to be a sociological law of armed conflicts. And therefore, there was criticism also from that aspect. But people were repeatedly asking for a dialogue so that the negative aspects could be mitigated. But as I was telling our friends just now, repeatedly the ordinary people would say, but we don't want the Maoists to go away. We don't want them to go away. Their presence has been beneficial. But we want this situation to be mitigated so that we don't get up every morning feeling happy that the previous night nobody was taken away from the family by the police or by the Maoists from the house. This became apparent to both sides. And one mainstream Telugu newspaper, at that time it was the third largest circulated Telugu daily, now it has fallen in circulation. It opened its edit page for letters from the people. And there was a flood of letters from the affected areas by ordinary persons. Again, none of them expressing any enmity towards the Maoists. A few were, but majority were not. But all of them calling for a dialogue. I am pointing out this because the response from the ordinary people living in the areas of conflict sent out a message both to the state and to the Maoists that the ordinary people want a dialogue. And after that, it became difficult for the two sides to say that we won't participate in the talks or the dialogue. And then a process came to, it was the present Chief Minister, Mr. Rajshekhar Reddy, when he came back to power in 2004, after 9-year period of Telugu Desam Party rule, one of his campaign promises was that he had been watching all this process going on. But once he comes to power, he'll open a dialogue, he'll have a ceasefire and open a dialogue with the Maoists. He did so. After 9 years being out of power, having come back to power, he had to keep a few promises. So that promise he kept for 6 months. There was a ceasefire for 6 months. I was part of a monitoring committee. We were supposed to monitor the ceasefire. Some of our friends like Professor Hargopal and Shankaran and Mr. Kannavaran were part of the mediating group of citizens who would mediate between the two sides. Two or three sittings took place. What happened in those sittings was that the Maoists were able to articulate their critique against the state, against the establishment, pointing out why they have taken to arms, what is the process by which the armed struggle became, in their understanding, necessary. The state came forward with some of its own answers. The process was going on for 6 months. There was not a single encounter. Andhra Pradesh is known for encounter killings over a period, especially the last 6 to 7 years before these talks. Almost one or two persons every second day would die in encounters somewhere in the state, and very few of them were actually armed militants. Most of them were ordinary sympathizers or a village militants who may help the militants and then come back and lead an agriculturalist life thereafter or a shepherd's life thereafter. But then the police establishment stepped in. This again we will find whenever we make an effort for any such dialogue, the police, the military, the paramilitary, whoever it is, their understanding is that any political dialogue, unless it is predicated upon ultimate surrender of weapons, any political dialogue with militants, unless it is predicated upon ultimate surrender of weapons, or in fact as a precondition, surrender of weapons and giving up of weapons, accepting for these two conditions, any political dialogue will only result in strengthening the militants. It is an understanding that the armed forces, the paramilitary, the police always have. It is true that certainly any political group would strengthen itself if there is peace. But for that matter, the police also strengthen themselves and said they also get much more information. Their policemen can go into villages where they could not earlier go. Because now there is a promise that the Maoists will not blow up their police vans. They also stuck to the promise. Both sides stuck to the promise for 6 months. So as far as information gathering or increasing influence goes, both sides took the advantage. But they want to blame only the Maoists. Like the Sri Lankan government repeatedly used to blame the LTTE. It uses every ceasefire to strengthen itself. That's what the Sri Lankan army also did. But that is regarded as legitimate. If the militants do it, it is regarded as illegitimate. This was there. But ultimately, the police in our state prevailed upon the government that these talks are not going to end in from their point of view, was the only legitimate goal of talk, that is a complete surrender of arms. It will not lead to that. It will only result in strengthening the militants. And the government of Rajasekhar Reddy wanted to keep his promise for 6 months. He broke the promise, not that he was ever really honest about it. He broke the promise and with one major encounter, killing, the process again broke down and the conflict started. Now they may say, what is the lesson we have from that for what we would like to do today? Because there is a threat that soon the paramilitary forces are going to be sent to Chhattisgarh, to Jharkhand, Orissa, maybe parts of West Bengal, Medinipur district and so on. If today we have to appeal to stop the militarization, naturally the appeal has to go to both sides. That's how the resolution has been prepared. There can't be merely appeal for peace, it has to be followed by some kind of a political process or a dialogue. What could be the dialogue about? What could they talk about? What could we expect from the process, and how do we go about persuading the two sides to come forward and accept? It is a very difficult task for two reasons. On the side of the Maoists, they have taken an official position and also declared it, that their participation in the dialogue has in fact weakened them, and it enabled the state thereafter to, because after the talks ended, the assault on the Maoists increased manifold, and today they are pushed to the wall to an extent which has never happened in the last 40 years. One may say in Andhra Pradesh they are, I wouldn't say wiped out, but a substantial extent their presence, except the areas bordering Odisha and Chhattisgarh, their presence has been, it could again increase, that's a different matter. But they have come to that conclusion, which many of us feel is not a realistic conclusion, but they have come to the conclusion. So that's an obstacle to persuading them to come forward for some kind of a peace process today. On the side of the state, I don't know how many of you have observed, but the success of the Sri Lankan state in suppressing the LTTE has had its impact upon these states in their military manifestation in India, in Pakistan, in Bangladesh, in all these countries, that they can. It was thought that these militant movements cannot be finished off. Now they believe they can be finished off purely by military means, as the Sri Lankan state has done. And this coincides with the kind of talk we hear from Chidambaram, who, as they have been jokingly saying, he has a newly appointed sub-inspector of police who has been for the first time given AK-47. That's how he keeps talking, the Home Minister of India. Whatever may be wrong with Shivraj Patil, at least he never indulged in this kind of talk. Chidambaram is indulging that kind of a talk. Now, there are two major obstacles for any kind of a process. But as I repeat, we are concerned. We are concerned that the area where this deployment of the paramilitary is likely to take place, the area where there is going to be a conflict, Maoists are not going to keep quiet, they are going to hit back. They have their capacity, how much they can withstand is a different matter. It is an area where very backward, very poor people who have not received any of the benefits of the welfare or development, whatever one wants to call it, in the last 60 years, are living, and many of them are Adivasis. If we keep quiet, it will be a whole episode of intense suffering for them. We want to avoid that suffering, and once again, without necessarily prejudging anything. But if this is to be a wide effort, I feel, and we do feel, that there has to be a wide response from society against the militarization, in spite of whatever critic that there can be about the title of the discussion today, in spite of that. There has to be a wide support for this, which would necessarily mean that we reduce the possibility of political conflict or differences as much as possible inside in this effort. There can be persons who believe that the Maoist agenda is the only one for liberating this country and creating a just society. There can be people who believe that the Indian constitution is capable of doing this, but for the corruption of the Congress party and so on and so forth. But all of them should be amenable to the argument that whatever happens, whatever is done, the ordinary people living in those areas shall not suffer. They are suffering a lot, it's intense suffering. Chhattisgarh, we have been seeing, living in Andhra Pradesh, because the conflict created by the Salvajudum, being a private vigilante group allowed to be armed by the Chhattisgarh state and allowed to go on a rampage. The result is a fallout on Andhra Pradesh. We have nearly 40 to 50,000 tribals who have run away from there, living on the margin of destitution in Andhra Pradesh. And in spite of all the effort that we human rights groups are trying to make in Andhra Pradesh to ensure that they get at least the minimum of livelihood, we are not able to persuade the government of our state to give them even BPL cards or job cards. That is the extent of, they don't say no, they don't do. It's a continuous dialogue and argument goes on with them. This is the suffering which we know will be the consequence, and this is what we want to mitigate. So what kind of an effort should we put in is a very major issue. And we are aware of all the other dimensions. Bandhupadhyay is there, he will talk about how the government of India itself wanted somebody to tell it. What could be the other way of approaching and handling the Nakhlite? They call it a problem, we don't call it a problem. Nakhlite is not a problem, it's a political process. A political process which has become a problem for the government more because of the government than because of neglects. Though the use of armed force also creates problems for the ordinary people, even if it is used by very disciplined revolutionaries, that's also a fact. The report was prepared, Mr. Bandyopadhyay will talk more about it. It's completely ignored. Basic point, whole point is that there are a large number of ordinary day-to-day issues concerning the basic democratic rights and freedoms and human rights of the people, which have not been addressed by the state, which have been addressed by the neglects in their own way, but as part of their agenda of building a guerrilla army, then perhaps a standing army, and then finishing the Indian state and capturing power, as part of that agenda, and therefore there are problems which stem from that agenda. And there, what could be the only suggestion to the state could be, you address those problems within your law. You have your PESA, Act 40 of 1996. You have your constitutional obligations under Article 244, under the 5th schedule, in the tribal areas. Even otherwise, you have a number of other obligations. Address these same problems through your own law, your own power, your own constitution. That could be the beginning of a way of tackling. Exactly the opposite method is being adopted now. Exactly the opposite method, throwing away that report and relying upon much more force than was used in Andhra Pradesh or elsewhere, contrary to the advice sought from the expert group. And this is what we would like to avoid because of the pain it is going to cause to the people living there. And the effort is worthwhile. Effort to persuade the Maoists without necessarily saying that the methods are wrong. One can believe they are right, they believe that they are wrong. But they also have an obligation, they also have a responsibility to ensure that the very people in whose name they speak, from whom they recruit their cadre, on whom they rely, shall not be put to too much of suffering beyond what may be unavoidable in any kind of a political conflict. And the state also has to be categorically told that you shall not handle a problem which stems from deprivation, stems from poverty, stems from marginalization by means of force. It's a long and difficult process, but I think the appeal of this meeting today is to all people, all organizations, basically those who, whatever they call themselves, Gandhians, Marxists, whatever it is. Basically, we believe that in the process of political change, suffering of the people should be reduced, mitigated as much as possible. In the process of governance, in the process of struggle also, should all come forward and participate in the effort. That is the appeal, and this is the experience. I will answer more if there are specific questions which we would like to share from Andhra Pradesh. Others in Andhra Pradesh who have been part of this process, they would also come someday and talk to you. Let us learn from that experience and try to do our best, the best that is possible for us in the interest of the lakhs of Adivasis and other poor people who are living in that area. Thank you.
Sir, I am a student. I am Abhay from JNU. I have listened to both the talks by Balagopal and then Himanshu. Sir, I have one query that the violence, we know that thousands of people are killed and then Salwa Judum and the state terrorism and then how a state has going to militarize the public sphere, that is fine, we all know about it. But I think that you are also trying to put blame on Maoist. Or what is the reality actually out there? Because we really don't know much about it. And since you are out in the field, we know about what a state can do. So if you please tell how Maoist are also going to contribute to further deterioration of this conditions there, what can they do better, or what they are doing that is leading to more violence, something like that, some strategic failure from their side, if you think they really exist. And second thing that, look, if you take the example of Palestine or Israel, if you read the media, that our mainstream media, that instead of taking any clear side or siding with the just cause, they are saying that, look, they have also attacked and that the security of Israel is also important. So I think what Maoists are doing and what the state are doing, I think both should not be seen on the same level. So if I get your reply.
See, whether we put the state and the Maoists at the same level or not is not the issue. The issue is we must recognize that Maoism as practiced in our country is not just a struggle of the oppressed against oppression. It's a political movement which has a political strategy of overthrow of the existing state power by armed struggle, by building a People's Liberation Army. Both ideologically, politically and also strategically, it bases itself upon the oppressed people. Not just as a cunning strategy, but as a matter of political faith, political belief and ideological understanding. It bends itself upon the oppressed people, mobilizes them, its cadre come mostly from them. Even the leadership up to a point come from those sections. But it is not merely fighting against oppression. It is fighting against oppression, helping the oppressed people to overcome oppression, creating opportunities for them to express themselves. Simultaneously, it is also fighting a war against the state. There are two aspects to Maoism, both have to be kept in mind. Often, one tends to either emphasize one, ignore the other, to romanticize the Maoists, ignore the one, emphasize only the other, to show them as terrorists. Both are false. It is this recognition of the duality of the two aspects of duality, two aspects of the Maoist phenomenon, their presence, that leads to our understanding that the state is able to, or state does respond to the second aspect, points out to that only, sends the army, sends the police and attacks them. And please remember one thing, as far as the Indian state is concerned, it has had a single consistent counter-insurgency strategy in all parts of the country, Kashmir, Nagaland, Telangana, Vidarbha, everywhere. That is, attack the social base of the militants, to isolate the militants and then finish them off. It is a consistent, single counter-insurgency strategy. And that's a vicious, brutal strategy. In response to that, Maoists in turn build up further violence to attack the agents of the state, to attack the state. That again leads to further violence. This is a spiral which is part of the whole issue, part of the whole problem. And that's why we are saying that, I am saying at least, Human Rights Forum at least says that the strategies of the Maoists for liberation of the country, they believe in it, many people believe in it, I am not commenting upon it. As a matter of fact, it does result in problems for the people also, whether it is unavoidable, inevitable or not, is a matter of political debate and discussion. Our job as human rights persons, as humanists is to see that it is mitigated as much as possible without totally ruling out the space for their kind of belief, their kind of political strategy. It is there, let it be there. But to mitigate the violence, the suppression, the oppression, the suffering it causes to the people becomes part of our task as human rights activists without denying their political space altogether. This is what we believe, and this is the reason why the Human Rights Forum would be like to be part of this process, while recognizing that it is not just a gang of people fighting the state to capture state power, but a political movement with a base, with an understanding, with a political process which is part of the oppressed people and their aspirations. We are recognizing that.